September 11th.
I'm not talking about September 11th.
Just because of September 11th.
September 11th is part of our debate.
What I did on September 11th.
Not just September 11th.
Not September 11th.
Nothing to do with September 11th.
Nothing to do with September 11th.
On September 11th.
They were my responsibility. That's the way I looked at it on September 11th.
And on September 11th.
September 11th.
In the post-September 11th period.
Until September 11th.
A terrible attack like September 11th.
I think we should remind ourselves because I remember it every day.
September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th.
He didn't have the knowledge of September 11th.
He didn't know September 11th was coming.
Pre-September 11th mentality.
Pre-September 11th mentality.
Before September 11th.
Before September 11th.
A long time before September 11th.
Quite some time before September 11th.
Then September 11th happened.
September 11th happens. Now you have September 11th.
Now we know about September 11th.
On 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 September 11th.
And once September 11th happened.
Within a half hour of September 11th.
Within a half hour on September 11th.
Coming out of September 11th.
The days following September 11th.
Since 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 September 11th.
On a future anniversary of September 11th.
We don't mention September 11th nearly as much as people think.
Hello, folks. I'm Martin, and you're listening to Kaput Radio, episode 2911. Well, you know, all the hype around New York. As a friend of mine recently said, we are reminded of 9/11 every day since 2001, and it sucks. So let me present a wider view about this event and some background, not told in the mainstream media. No, I'm not about the truthers or inside job claims. It's a much more psychological and global viewpoint. Welcome to episode 211.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Terrorism has changed the world, and Australia is not immune. But the way of life we all value so highly must go on.
Go on.
Must go on.
Listen to me.
If you see something unusual or suspicious, use your judgment.
Use your judgment.
If it doesn't add up, ring up.
Ring up.
Let's look out for Australia.
We have agreed today on unusual laws for Australia. We've done that because we live in unusual circumstances.
Let me just interrupt you for a minute. Please. Because we have a new piece of footage that has come in that gives us another perspective, yet another perspective of the tragedy as it was literally unfolding this day, showing that second plane from a different angle as it slammed into the...
Fear is a powerful means of gaining control of people's minds. It's very easy to learn, but hard to forget.
Well, the danger is real, but I think the danger is moderate, and the danger really has to be extreme and immediate before you can embrace really far-reaching, intrusive new powers that really are quite at odds with the kind of libertarian civil liberties respecting democratic tradition of this country. To see a potential terrorist under every falafel on every street corner in some of our suburbs is, I think, going too far, and we've got to be very careful about getting overexcited about the need for draconian laws of this kind.
Every animal is born with the capacity to be afraid. So we don't have to learn how to be afraid. What we learn is what to be afraid of in our lives. Fear spreads very easily between people. It's contagious. It spreads to the people around you directly, to people who hear about it, and on. It starts from one thought that then spreads contagiously, just as fear can spread within a society. So can anxiety spread within the society of your mind.
Overexcited about the need for... Overexcited about the need for... Overexcited about the need for draconian laws of this kind. Overexcited about the need for... Overexcited about the need for... Overexcited about the need for draconian laws of this kind. There's always the political temptation to do too much rather than too little. The fear is always that you'll be blamed for doing too little. And I think there has been a sort of a race to embrace these propositions, which has probably gone a little bit further than is necessary.
The tidal wave of fear first hit those who were at the World Trade Center on September 11th.
Police and security agencies are working hard, but you could help them complete the picture. If you see anything suspicious, call the 24-hour National Security Hotline and help protect Australia from terrorism. Call 1-800-123-400. Trained operators take every call seriously, and you can remain anonymous.
People who have had previous difficulties with fear and anxiety
can be more vulnerable and can have an exacerbation under those circumstances.
The underlying assumption of the whole terrorist hotline, I think, is questionable. Trained intelligence officers with many, many years of experience in counter-terrorism find it virtually impossible to identify at first glance who is or who isn't a terrorist. So to expect Mrs. Smith or Mrs. Jones to identify a terrorist and then dob them into the terrorist hotline, I think, is simply a ludicrous assumption. I think as it stands at the moment, it seems to me that the terrorist hotline is very much a sort of taxpayer-funded avenue for vigilantism.
Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
The new counter-terrorism powers should be opposed because they're arbitrary, have no real safeguards, and depend on trust, which the government and the Labor Party haven't earned.
Get trusted! Get trusted!
Against democracy, against freedom, for a particular ideology, close to fascism, close to Nazism. Against democracy, against freedom, for a particular ideology, close to fascism, close to Nazism.
I don't think a lot of people have really caught on how serious a state that we're in now. We're on the verge of a completely fascist state. I don't think these laws are just going to be put in because they're worried about some Muslim extremists. I think what we're having is a complete overhaul of the state. And one of the things that they need is to get the propaganda control completely so that they'll just crush people like 3CR and we'll just have American news bites.
Yeah, well, this is about... See, what happens is when these laws are passed, most people will be self-censoring. And the laws are there to intimidate people in terms of what they think they can and cannot say. And I think self-censorship is going to be the biggest problem we face.
Fear is a powerful means of gaining control of people's minds. It's very easy to learn, but hard to forget.
You will disappear.
Get trusted!
Against democracy.
Get trusted!
Against freedom. For a particular ideology close to fascism.
The tidal wave of fear first hit those who were at the World Trade Center on September 11th.
You're right, the things are in place. They are. If you ring this program once these laws are passed and make a comment that you support the insurgency in Iraq, you can be jailed for up to 7 years.
You will disappear.
You can be jailed for up to 7 years.
Against democracy, against freedom, for a particular ideology, close to fascism, close to Nazism. Truth is so precious that she should always be attended by a bodyguard of lies.
It spreads to the people around you directly, to people who hear about it, and on. It starts from one thought that then spreads contagiously. Just as fear can spread within a society, so can anxiety spread within the society of your mind.
You will disappear.
You can be jailed for up to 7 years.
You will disappear.
You can be jailed for up to 7 years.
Truth is so precious that she should always be attended by a bodyguard of lies.
Get trusted!
We have the ability of our higher brain to contextualize what we're seeing, that it's coming from a TV or a magazine. But still, those are later parts of the brain, and it takes work. It takes work to remember that, to create an interpretation, which is that this is only an image.
Even among those who believe that the war on Afghanistan was part of the so-called war on terrorism, there's a fairly wide recognition that the outcome, the occupation of Afghanistan, might have something to do with the ambitions of U.S. oil corporations.
Oil, work, energy, war.
Oil fields.
The Caspian Basin and Central Asia are the keys to energy in the 21st century. Those who control the oil routes out of Central Asia will impact all future direction and quantities of flow and the distribution of revenues.
Oil fields. Afghanistan could prove the key to the enormously rich and lucrative oil fields in the former Soviet Central Asia in countries such as Tajikistan and Uzbekistan.
Oil.
Finger.
In other words, a pipeline through, of all places, Afghanistan, needed to carry an estimated $5 trillion worth of Caspian oil and gas reserves to markets. A significant detail that surely is not lost on those in power in the United States.
Why is that not talked about when everyone at any meeting talks about it away from the mainstream media?
I think that's a really good question, Bill. I don't know the answer to it.
I think we both know the answer, probably.
Yeah, well, maybe.
It's hard to just invade a country out of the blue. The perfect pretext is a so-called war on terrorism.
It's a kiss of death from Mr.
Oil.
Maybe we can, in fact, take a view and see this as a war of conquest to take over further oil fields or something like that.
This heart is cold. He loves only
oil.
10 years of the war on terror, I think, has to be located also in the context of more than 10 years of liberal warfare since 1989 and the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War structures. This was not an aberration. The last 20 years, I think, have been an opportunity seized by liberal regimes to write the world according to the moral sentiments and commercial dynamics of liberal political economy, and to give expression, in fact, to military and martial drivers that were always there in liberalism from the very beginning in the 18th century. First enunciated in the 18th century as a theory of moral sentiments and as an astonishing, innovative commercial and financial enterprise. The argument was made by Smith, David Hume, many others, and repeated since. The argument was that this theory of moral sentiments and this commercial innovative capacity, not least in relation to the invention of credit, would help to establish peaceable relations nationally and internationally. The paradox of this early enunciation of liberalism was not that it brought an end to war, but that it multiplied the reasons for making war. Those are the moral sentiments of liberalism. And not that it limited war financially, but that it extended also the means for making war, since the move from money and species and bullion to credit vastly increased the finance available for the waging of war. So there you've got it. A central paradox at the core of liberalism, proclaiming itself as a means of restricting war, paradoxically multiplying reasons for making war. Fast forward to the late 20th century. Again, we find liberal regimes waging war, and we find liberal regimes giving expression to the theory of moral sentiments and the commercial drivers and ambitions of liberalism, but in specific ways contemporary to the last 20 years. One of the ways in which there was a difference, but it was a difference, I think, which intensified the paradox of the 18th century, multiplying reasons for making war, extending the mechanisms for waging war, was a shift from the political anthropology that had underwritten the theory of moral sentiments of early liberalism, Smith, Hume and the rest, a kind of theory of moral sentiments which is based upon the notion of the possessive individual liberal subject, a shift from that, or at least a supplementing of that, by this curious biophilosophy of the late 20th century, which gave rise to a kind of political biology. Expressing a kind of zeitgeist of the age, this political biology, this biophilosophy was taken up by military strategic thinkers in the United States in the aftermath of the dissolution of the Cold War, as they rethought global, international and competitive relations and threats to security and ways of waging war in the future, in the absence of the old Cold War structures. Life would become informationalized. Complex adaptation, transformation and change was given a biological twist as well as a commercial twist. And much of this found its expression not just in complexity thinking, but in what was called network-centric thinking,
giving rise in military strategic terms in the United States to a transformation of the United States military strategic apparatus and industrial apparatus to through what was called the Revolution in Military Affairs, so-called, to the adoption of a network-centric warfare strategy, which was not just a strategic theory, but dug deep down into the structures of the American military. Indeed, under Rumsfeld and Sobrowski, the architects of this military strategic thinking, an office of force transformation, signaling the commitment to life and to military life as a process of continuous adaptation and change, was instituted in the Pentagon. Here then, I think you get a multiplication again of reasons for war, but uninhibited now by any competitive model arguments to liberalism. And that multiplication of reasons for war after 1989, there was no competitive model argument against it, only the liberal arguments for it in terms of rogue states, intervention into civil wars, and so on. That multiplication of the means in the late 20th century, multiplication of the reasons in the late 20th century, was of course also complemented by, through the credit revolution of the late 20th century, a vast increase in the financial means for waging war as well. Credit, commerce, moral sentiments, allied again in the last 20 years, but allied and given expression through the war on terror, allied and given expression through the adoption of network-centric thinking, revolution in military affairs, and so on. Now, if the paradox of 18th century liberalism was that the moral sentiments in commerce gave rise to a multiplication of reasons for war and an extension of the mechanisms for waging war, an additional complex arose in the last 20 years. Here, a vast apparatus of international and global intervention, war on terror, intervening in failed states, and so on. This vast apparatus for increasing security, of course, seemed in addition, or paradoxically, to generate vast insecurity. Indeed, insecurity became internalized. And the paradox for liberalism was that this apparatus for creating security, creating vast insecurity, also created mechanisms for threatening liberal freedom.
But when the war, you know, when there's that patriotism, nationalism, fascism thing going on, and that stuff rises to the top, and then you get to hear it, you know, incessantly, and that's what the war is good for, you know, in a sense. And my favorite song, I actually got to hear it twice, is God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood. You know, which he wrote that for the Gulf War, but then, fucking September 11th, 9/11 remix. Yeah. That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Our nation is at war.
A different kind of war.
The war on terror.
We are winning the war.
A war on many fronts.
No one likes war.
Our war on terror has well begun.
The war on terror is our fight.
In the war against terror.
In the war on terror.
In the war on terrorism.
They were acts of war.
And war is what they got.
War.
If war is forced upon us,
win the war.
We are winning the war.
We'll prevail in the war.
We'll win this war.
Win the war.
Till this war is won.
We are winning.
We are winning the war.
But war
and war
are at war.
Yet as we act to win the war,
we'll win this war.
Weapon of war.
Started this war.
Fight and win this war.
Are at war.
World War III.
Beyond the war on terror.
Depression and war.
Have always been at war.
And went to war.
The war goes on.
And the uncertainties of war.
Where the war began.
After the war.
Our war.
This war.
Win the war.
But war.
Win the war.
They were acts of war.
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 War. War is not my first choice.
War.
We are winning the war.
We are winning the war.
Yeah.
This is the world's fight.
This is a call to war.
This is civilization's fight.
We are winning. 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 We are winning the war.
We wage a war to save civilization itself.
Alarmed.
In a frightening sign of the times, Australians are preparing themselves for terrorist attacks.
Be alarmed. Be alarmed.
Gilla Davidson imports bioterrorism equipment from Israel. Since the government's terrorism awareness campaign began, her business has been inundated with orders.
One Melbourne company has reported a 40% increase in its sales of gas masks.
People are scared to death.
Freedom and fear are at war.
It's gone very well. They're just desperately scared.
If we wait for threats to fully materialize, we will have waited too long.
It could mean that there are some nasty surprises in store.
Recent ASIO raids.
Be alarmed, but not alert.
The alert pointing to spectacular attacks, mass casualties, severe economic damage, and maximum psychological trauma.
The stress of too much information leads to sickness and even premature death.
The Pentagon is clearly moving to create the largest electronic eye ever.
It has gone extremely well, and they can't possibly win.
The government raises its terror alert code from yellow to orange.
Why is it wrong for dictators and terrorists to kill innocent civilians, and right or excusable for the United States to do exactly the same?
Well, the United States doesn't do it, and if we did it, it would be as reprehensible as what the terrorists do.
The United States doesn't kill innocent civilians?
No, the United States does not target civilians.
Those of us on the outside who look at September the 11th, where 3,000 people died in that tragedy, but then look at the thousands who have died since, wonder about double standards. Could you address that?
I think that the numbers that you're talking about are questionable. So let's leave aside your numbers.
Why are they questionable?
I mean, I don't accept your assertion that we've killed thousands of innocent people.
For a moment, I apologize, sir. Would you stop tape, please, for one moment? Thank you very much. Let me know when you stop tape.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, I'm doing this purposefully, sir. Have we stopped tape?
This is very serious.
I was not under the impression, sir.
Mr. Fife's minder, an army colonel, suddenly stopped the interview as I had pursued the question of civilian deaths.
Civilian deaths, civilian deaths, 10 or 100 or 1,000,000 deaths.
Yeah. Fears the day could bring a biological disaster.
Be alarmed.
From surviving on snake blood to lessons in duck and cover, military helicopters are patrolling the skies.
Be alarmed. Be alarmed.
The American public has been warned to exercise extra vigilance.
Our security agencies have been upgraded and are ready to detect, prevent, and respond to anything suspicious.
Fear is a powerful means of gaining control of people's minds. It's very easy to learn, but hard to forget.
You gotta fight for your right!
What these laws do is distract, and I go back to the original point, it's very important. You haven't raised it, and I doubt whether you would have raised it. If we're talking about terrorism, left out of the debate is state terrorism. The fact that Australia enthusiastically joined a rapacious, illegal attack on a defenseless country in which tens of thousands of people died. That is an illegal and an act, in effect, of terrorism. Why is that not included in the whole debate on terrorism? Because in the end, you know, state terrorism absolutely dwarfs the kind of Al-Qaeda variety, which is minuscule compared with the kind of bloodshed and suffering and attack that has gone on in Iraq.
Redefine the enemy.
I have to really find the enemy. I really find the enemy.
State terrorism. State terrorism.
What is the aftermath of 9/11 on vulnerable minds?
This is how animals act when they're attacked. What are their choices? They fight if they can, they run if they can,
or they freeze.
The collective government motivation for the tougher security legislation.
We feel as though the COAG participants have really put political interests ahead of the public interest.
State terrorism.
These laws are a provocation. Worse, they are the beginning of a kind of democratic police state. That may sound dramatic, but you know, the most basic freedoms always go in a very quiet and insidious way.
People who have had previous difficulties with fear and anxiety can be more vulnerable and can have an exacerbation under those circumstances.
That anxiety is taking an emotional toll. God damn it! That scared the hell out of me!
Thanks for listening to episode 211 on the cult of 9/11. It has become today. I reckon now that the renewed threat of a global financial collapse is the main threat, and since Guy Fawkes' days, the excluded were always the small terrorist and the state was always the big terrorist, we can let it all pass and devote more time selling those people pillows that bite back for their personal attitudinal adjustments. If you're a pillow biter, get one. It may help. My name is Martin, and you can catch me next time.
You can check the web details at kaputradio.libsyn.com.
Terrorist attacks.
In a world of chaos, botulinum toxin, chemical agents, anthrax, biological weapons labs, cutting out tongues, terrible disease, bioterrorism, mutilation,
communists to torture people,
burning with hot irons.
acid.
Dripping acid on the skin.
Throwing them off a three-story building.
Electric shock.
Pulling out their tongues and cutting them off.
And mass murder.
We're not just going to shoot the bastards. We're going to cut out their living guts.